being listened to feels damn good. So I'm seeing every conflict, every issue, every problem as an opportunity. So I see every opportunity as an opportunity to sort of promote the empathy circle practice, and which promotes empathy.
Hello and welcome to The Empathizer, the podcast for more mutual understanding in our society. My name is Sebastian Kremser and I listen to my guests to understand what moves them. Today I listen to Edwin. He talks about his search for meaning in his life and how he found it in his commitment to empathy. He is committed to building an empathy movement and talks about the Empathy Center in Santa Barbara, where the process of the Empathy Circle is taught and lived. He also talks about the use of empathy tents to connect people, for example, at demonstrations. For him, true empathy is mutual empathy. And now, enjoy listening. Hello, and today I welcome Edwin to the podcast Empathizer. And as usual, I will start with the question, what is the topic, the issue which is moving you, which is important for you, and you would like to be heard with?
Yeah, well, thanks for the invite to chat with you, Sebastian. Yeah, the number one topic right now for me is building an empathy movement. So I really want to raise the level of empathy in society because I see it as the core value that can really transform society and, you know, bridge a lot of the polarization and all kinds of different social, personal, cultural problems that society has. I think empathy is like the core value that we can build on. So just working on that, kind of dedicating my life, the rest of my life to that topic.
Wow. So empathy is for you the most important value which can change and transform the current challenges we have in society or as an individual in yourself. And this is what's moving you, and you would like to spread it and creating a movement about empathy.
Exactly. Yeah, I've been doing that for the past 15 years. So 15 years ago, I became interested in the topic of empathy. I was making different documentaries on different human values and came across the value of empathy. And in my youth, I'd spent like 10 years traveling around the world as a seeker, you know, kind of seeking the meaning of life. And when I started learning about empathy, I just thought, wow, this is really what I was seeking for. It's like, how do we connect as human beings to each other? And, you know, I'd connect with people all over the world and just saw that, you know, people are pretty much the same all over the world at the core. And you can connect and make friends and see each other's humanity. And when I sort of came across the term empathy, you know, 15 years ago or so, I thought, oh, this is really the core to seeing each other's humanity. And, you know, we just need to raise the value of this. And one of the motivations was, you know, I know you're in Germany and my parents come from Germany. They were in East Prussia and, you know, Germans, mother was German, you know, ethnic German in Poland. So they went through World War II, and I heard all the stories of, you know, what they went through in the war with, you know, all my father's family members being shot, you know, in their home in East Prussia, mother, you know, going through the rapes and all that in Eastern Germany. And, you know, and it's also something, you know, that I want to do. I think that those are all stories of the lack of empathy. You know, all of World War II was a lack of empathy. The Nazis was a lack of empathy. The, you know, the communists or just all those. And it's so that's, again, you know, I think if we can raise the level of empathy in society, we can head off those wars and all that brutality that's going on all over the world right now. And it's really, you know, we need a movement to raise that level of empathy. And that's, you know, what I'm, like I was saying, doing right now is working on that.
Okay. So as a teenager, you started to traveling and seeking what's the purpose of life. And during your life, 15 years ago, you came to the point that empathy is a core value which makes a difference because of your family history and your personal connection to this, yeah, the history of war. You can also sense the need for empathy, and I guess when I listen to you, that it could be that empathy could help there to heal, something like that, right? You mean
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I think it can heal as well as head off these wars, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we could get the Palestinians mm-hmm. and Israelis to listen to each other,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, now it's hard in the heat of a war, but, yes. you know, during the peacetime, we think a lot more could have been done. The Israelis yeah. could have had empathic dialogue, and we have a process called the empathy circle
yeah.
that, you know, based on active listening, you know, mm. Carl Rogers, active listening,
yeah.
but doing it in small groups. You know, if it had been taught in the Israel society, family, schools, as well as in the Palestinian families and schools mm. and in the culture, if the politicians would have these empathic dialogues that we could model mm. that way of being, and in countries all over, you know, where we have yeah. all these different countries, we could be doing that. So that's, mm. yeah.
So for you, it's important to bring the people together and to talk, actually listen to each other, what's alive in them, what's moving them, what's important for them, yeah, as prevention for violence, and also to create connection and to get to know each other deeper, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so that's my experience, is mm-hmm. that empathy has really been helpful in relationships. We need to be teaching mm. these relational skills. And, you know, I try all kinds of different approaches. How do mm. we, you know, do this? And I ran for Congress, for example, you know, in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And as the empathy candidate, so trying to get the message out through the political sphere. Oh. We do have trainings. We have this empathy tent that we take out to mm-hmm. public places. When Trump was elected, you know, the political right would come to Berkeley because it's a very liberal Berkeley, California, where the university is. So there'd be these political, you know, the right would come out, Proud Boys, and the political left, Antifa, would come out, and they'd have these knockdown, drag out fights. Mm-hmm. Some were physical, you know, kind of bloody at times. Mm-hmm. And we had the empathy tent there, and we try to listen to both sides and bring people together in the empathy tent to listen to each other. So that's mm-hmm. another initiative. And another one is, since you're just recording audio, people can't see it, but behind me, my screen is the Empathy Center in Santa Barbara. My brother purchased this property. It's 35 acres. You know, it's about 15 hectares, I guess, for people in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And has 55,000 square feet of buildings. It was an old Catholic seminary.
Mm-hmm.
So he purchased that and asked me to manage it. And we're running it as developing it now as the Empathy Center. So creating a center for empathy, for the empathy movement.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting curious about, you know, when your brother bought this property, so he's also invited and interested and motivated to contribute to empathy. And I'm wondering, so you said you were seeking for the purpose of life, and then 15 years ago you started with this empathy, let's say, topic or skill. I'm curious about what brought you to this insight, or have you made a specific experience that you get so involved, or that this topic of empathy is so meaningful, important for you, that you said, yes, I manage now this center, and I offer skill development workshops for empathy.
Yeah, there was no like, you know, light bulb going off moment. I was making a documentary about progressive values. So the conservatives at that time talked a lot about, oh, conservative values and progressives, you know, were, I thought, well, what are progressive values? At the time, I sort of identified more as a progressive. I started interviewing people about their values, and the topic of empathy would come up. And empathy, and then with care, and they, people would tell stories about that, and their eyes would tear up, you know, telling those stories. I thought, oh, this is really important. And then as I looked into it more, there's a writer, I mean, an academic, George Lakoff, who teaches at UC Berkeley, and he was making the case that the core progressive value is empathy. So, you know, seeing people's emotions, seeing that intellectual framing that the core value is empathy. I kind of went into it more. And then as I sort of started learning, you know, about using conflict mediation, empathic listening, it's like, it just kind of the doors kept opening. Like this is more and more and more interesting. And I know you do some NVC, you know, I did NVC workshops, conflict mediation workshops, and just started seeing the power of actually doing empathy in small groups and conflict mediation and personal support. And then said, well, I just want to focus on this one value and start interviewing people and and just learning more and more. So and it's just just like a snowball kind of.
I see.
But there was no one moment where the light bulb clicked. There was sort of small little moments of sort of realization.
I guess this snowball image is a good picture for to describe it and how this developed. And now, and it's a, and now you have a big ball there, right?
It's getting bigger. Yeah.
It's the center.
I hope it gets.
And so we are talking about empathy. So I'm also curious about what makes it feel. What do you feel when you do your job and you promote empathy, when you manage this empathy center in Santa Barbara, and also when you give offer the workshop and you do empathy mediation or conflict mediation, and what kind of experience do you make there in this situation, and what's fulfilling in you when you make this experience?
Yeah, so it's a deeper fulfillment in it. I think when I feel heard, you know, I have empathy buddies who just listen to me.
Yeah.
So I share maybe my stresses and strains of, and then when I share those, like I start feeling lighter. I feel more spacious. And that, you know, don't feel so constricted, and my, you know, muscles kind of relax, and I feel connected with the people, have a sense of, you know, feeling connected, not alone or, you know, alienated or disconnected. So I have that sense of deeper connection, and there's a sense of satisfaction too, when doing conflict mediation. You know, I see people kind of, I see their deeper, you know, you see their deeper humanity. So seeing the deeper humanity, I guess what you're trying to get to, what's that deeper feeling? Just seeing that and experiencing that is as a fulfilling, like I'm getting closer to the core of truth or something. And also, so and then it's satisfying to see. I get, when we do the trainings, a lot of people are always saying, oh, this is really good. I use this in my family. It's really helped. So it feels like a sense of contribution and, you know, if it's creating a better world, and in that sense of just people being able to listen to each other and having those skills. So it feels like I'm, you know, contributing in some way.
So it's fulfilling for you, gives you sense and purpose to doing that.
Yeah, meaning.
Meaning, yeah.
Connection.
And I guess it, because it gives you also a huge motivation, I guess, and also energy to do it. So I guess something change for the people who are coming to the center and going to the workshops, and also I guess you could observe your impact to people, to the society, by doing this.
Yeah, it's like people take the training and they say, oh, I used to fight with my father all the time, but now I kind of have more spaciousness and I can listen, you know, to him. And he's noticed my listening and it's had an impact on just our sense of connection. So, you know, I hear a lot of stories like that. And another example of putting it to use is here at the center, you know, we had we're doing some cooking, we're using an outside grill, for example, and somebody was supposed to clean that grill and they turned it on and then left. You know, they turned it on to start heating it up so it'd be easier to clean, and then they left to do something else, and then they got, you know, delayed. And then I came out there and there was a big grease fire had been started. So, you know, flames are shooting out of the grill. So I was like super pissed and angry. And then the two people who were sort of responsible for cleaning it came, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, damn it. you're like going to burn the place down here and, you know, being irresponsible. And I said, well, one of them said, well, let's have an empathy circle, which is our core practice, you know, and that's what we have is a core practice is, which is mutual active listening, empathic listening. And if you're part of the team here, you agree that if there's a conflict, you will take part in an empathy circle if somebody calls for it, you know? And so they called for an empathy circle and we spent an hour, you know, talking about the issues, you know, you can't, you know, my anger, you know, they're feeling guilty, you know, or, and all the different feelings that, and there's a lot of issues around that came up. But out of that came then we said, well, what are we going to do about this? And it was like, we're going to create a policy, you know, a web page with all the steps for managing the grill, you know, all the rules. You can't leave it unattended. It has to be, you know, at a distance from the building, just all the different issues and steps. So out of that came a policy. And what I noticed is that the people in the circle that I had actually more trust for them. It was like a more of a trust that they were calling for an empathy circle. And I know that in the future, if something happens, that we have this process, this empathic process for problem solving and creating constructive next steps. So that's just a, you know, just a practical aspect.
Then you have the progressive a result you mentioned before, that progressive methods.
Exactly. Something came out of it. Yeah. Some real policies and procedures came out of it.
And there's less or no judging and blaming each other because of the mistake. So you use this incident to create something out of it through empathy and listening to each other. What's the situation created in all the participant of this incident, right?
Yeah, it could have been me just screaming and yelling at them, telling them what idiots they were.
What's common in society, right?
How irresponsible you are, and then just, you know, they'd feel terrible, and it would create a bad energy, you know, going forward, and there's sort of a mistrust. But this was, you know, talking through all the, and there was a lot of incidental things that came up too about, you know, concern that they want to be involved in the space. And is this going to harm their potential for being involved in the long term? They had done some work on arranging the meeting space. And I hadn't really acknowledged that before, but then, you know, I did acknowledge that I appreciated what I appreciated about their work of having done a really nice job of creating a nice atmosphere in the meeting space. And so, yeah, a lot came out of it, and it was we modeled sort of the world we want. We're not going to stop conflicts, but we have some tools and practices for addressing the conflicts when they come, and we have an agreement that we're going to use these processes, and that we have these empathy circles before the conflict even starts, you know, that we everybody's practicing the empathy circles. We have our training for learning the empathy circle practice
to create the basic trust in the group, right?
Exactly,
when you have the tension, you can just jump into the circle and prevent that the tension becomes a conflict, right?
Yeah, and it's actually an opportunity to use the empathy circle. It's like, for me, it's like, oh, good, we have a conflict. I get to use and promote the empathy circle. Yeah. So like when we did the empathy tent, the conservatives, they saw the empathy tent. There was an article written in Breitbart, which was one of the magazines that had supported Trump early on. Mm-hmm. And they wrote about the empathy tent doing mediation. It was actually a very fair article. But the readers, there was like 400 articles by readers who were making fun of the tent, you know, saying, oh, you libtards, you know, wimps, you this, and all these criticisms. And I thought it was great that they had that interest in comments. And I said, oh, great, you have this, you know, these comments. Let's have a dialogue and let's use the empathy circle to discuss. I want to hear what you have to say. So I'm seeing every conflict, every issue, every problem as an opportunity to invite them into it. And I said, let's have a video recorded dialogue on Zoom, and we'll show it to the world, you know, and you can, and there can be three of you, three critics and just me. It's like, you know, I'm glad to do a circle with as many, you know, critics together. Yeah. And it's so... So I see every opportunity as an opportunity to sort of promote the empathy circle practice, and which promotes empathy.
Yeah. Actually, I do. I take the similar way when I'm looking in LinkedIn for guests I invite to the empathy podcast or the empathizer. And when someone is posting something which is where I have the impression that it's a topic which is moving him, like, could be something conservative or radical, I reach out to them and invite him to the empathy session in the empathizer to actually do the same too. Yeah, and then
you go with the energy. You see some energy out there, and you invite that energy into
So what I'm hearing from you, and what I guess what's a huge motivation for you is offering a progressive method like empathy circle, empathy at all, to contribute to more, to a progressive development. I have heard you talked about war, Palestinian Second World War. So also, I guess, to contribute to peace and to more togetherness and collaboration, right? I guess that is the same point.
Yeah, you mentioned progressive. You know, first I said I identified as a progressive. I don't know if you mean progressive in terms of political. A progressive. I have since said I'm not a liberal, not a progressive, conservative, not the Republican, Democrat. I'm standing for empathy. So I've since sort of changed my view that it's really empathy that I'm advocating for. So
I guess I mean progressive, not in a political way, more in a development way. So something. So I would when I would say conservative, I would say I would like to have the thing that I, like they are in the past, and I would like to conserve it like this. Mm-hmm. And progressive would be for me something that can develop or evolve. You know, that's my meaning when I'm using progressive.
Yeah, it's for me, it's like let's create a space for those different approaches to dialogue with each other and have tools for dialoguing. Yeah. Because each side has, you know, they have value.
Yeah.
Important values to them, and it's just when they stop talking to each other that the problems start. So it's really bringing those sides together to talk with each other. Seems at least that's what we're working on. Is
so for you, it's important to being in the energy of empathy, listen to the people, listen what's important for them, even which kind of approach or concepts, and to understand them without judging them, and just going and see what's emerged when the people felt hurt And they, yeah, I know. Then the energy or the feeling of being connected and being hurt each other erases, I guess. In my experience, then something in space opens up, in which something different we haven't
exactly
thought
yeah.
about it can create it together, even they have different point of views, right?
Yeah, exactly. If there's some new ideas or new energies where they actually besides actually agree with each other and can work collaboratively with each other. So in terms of the values, I see empathy as a first step. And a lot of times empathy is defined as an individual empathizing, listening to, sensing into someone else. I think empathy, the real empathy is mutuality. So we have empathy. I'm willing to listen to people, even if they're not willing to listen to me to begin with. But the intention is to create mutual empathy. And that's why the empathy circle is so powerful, because it really focuses on the mutuality of a group.
Yeah.
And so with mutuality, even if people don't like each other, if there's mutual listening, I can like hate you, but I'm willing to listen to you. So there's some kind of a care in just being willing to listen. And so out of that mutual listening, a little bit of trust develops, a bit of care develops. Connection, and it starts a whole positive cycle. And there's more openness, then more openness leads to more depth and care and connection. So a whole positive cycle. And I think a whole culture actually develops out of that first step of being willing to empathize with others, and then mutuality, even if you don't even like the people, you're still willing to do that because you have trust in the value of empathy.
So for you, it's about the intention, I guess. So the intention in the circle to listen empathically to each other, even we are somehow different. And your experience with this intention, this kind of intention and doing actually then creates a basic trust, so that something that the people make a different experience as usual when they go into their judging and screaming out and talking instead of listening.
And even with the empathy circle, we have free speech, right? It's like you're willing to be as judgmental as you want when it's your turn to speak.
Right? I guess I see.
But your judgment will be met by empathy. And so you can usually the judgment, a lot of the judgment is just the frustration people have. And once their judgment is heard and empathized with, they kind of shift and go deeper. And then, and there can be a lot of pain in between, you know, and stuff. But if you stick with it, eventually it seems like it always moves through.
So your intention is to interrupt the disconnection, actually, because of this disconnecting habits we usually have developed, and promoting habits of connection and reconnection through empathy. And one important point I have heard from you is this mutual empathy in a group and to each other, because when I'm listening to you to this point, I guess this creates a level to all participants. Instead of then, if there would be only one person who gives empathy, and you know, I'm the big empathizer and I know how to do it, and then you have when it's mutual, then it creates an A level of energy exchange, I guess.
Yeah, and I would even say that true empathy is mutual empathy, because it's like, how do we see the world? If you say if you see the world in individualistic terms. Then it's like, oh, I'm empathizing with everybody. Nobody empathizes with me. I don't want to do empathy because it's not worth it, because nobody. But if you define empathy in relationship, that if people aren't empathizing with you, it's an empathy deficit that's happening.
Getting exhausted.
And you're exhausted. So it's not the problem with empathy. The actual problem is the lack of empathy. And I see that same problem with the academics. They're always criticizing empathy. I mean, not always, but there's some who criticize empathy, but it's how they define it. And they define it, at least in America, a lot from this individual. You as an individual, go empathize with the world or whatever. It's not seen as a relationship. And there's no, everybody's in a relationship. It's like, it's almost like denying reality that we are in relationship all the time, you know, with ourselves, parts of ourselves, or with the world, with others. And so not to see that, it, I think, is really missing something.
And through empathy, we can experience this kind of the relationship and the connectedness. And I guess this because of a lack of empathy and the and deficit of empathy, so that we know the disconnect, but we haven't experienced this true kind of connection. You know what I mean?
So I think are you trying to get to the feeling of empathy, to the what it feels like this feeling of connection, the sense, the felt sense of empathy?
I guess I was thinking about where comes this skepticism from the scientists about empathy, or the judgment about empathy is a individual thing, and you said it's mutual. So when I'm talking about it, came up this kind of, you know, I will come from my experience. My experience of myself or with other people is that when people get to know empathy and making their first experience, it's a lot of giving empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you forget to receive empathy, then you went into the deficit. And you said, oh, empathy, what is that? It's very exhausting. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work because I'm frustrated because of my deficit.
Yeah.
And they have forgotten if empathy is both, you know, connecting to the emotions and feelings and needs of my surrounding. It could be nature, animals also, right?
Yeah.
But also feel myself through self-empathy, but also make me touchable and vulnerable to others by receiving the empathy from them, you know?
Maybe. Yeah, again, I think you're heading towards, instead of the individualistic view of it, the relational view of it, see empathy, define empathy. Yeah. The fullness of empathy is a mutual empathic relationship. That's the full.
Yeah.
And then if there's a lack of empathy, for example, you hear the academics, the critics are saying, well, empathy is neutral and, you know, the torturer uses empathy, mm-hmm. right? Well, again, if you have a torturer and a torturee, mm-hmm. that, you know, an empathic relationship is I listen to you, the torturer listens to the one that they want to torture or get information from, mm-hmm. but it's mutual. And as soon as you stop that mutuality and start using any insights that you learned to cause pain on the other person, mm-hmm. you're not in empathy. It has become an empathy deficit.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is not that's something wrong with empathy. Mm-hmm. It's wrong with the deficit of empathy, you know, and a lot of the criticisms is kind of sort of definitional problems and just not understanding that the thing they're criticizing is a deficit. For example, the book, there's a book by Paul Bloom called Against Empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And what he says is, like, if you're my therapist, for example, mm-hmm. and I come to you and you're going to listen to me and I'm like angry, I'm sort of raging. For him, empathy is you start raging and get angry too. And he calls that empathy. And for me, that's actually an empathy deficit, because true empathy or a deeper empathy would have been you just listening to me like you've been doing. When you start raging and disconnect from me with sympathy or your mm-hmm. own, you know, state matching or mm-hmm. identifying, you're no longer present with mm-hmm. me. So a lot is just kind of how people are defining it, and then also not seeing the relationship. Mutuality and relationality of empathy.
So when I'm listening to this, it makes sense for me why you have an empathy center, because I guess in your experience, maybe there is a need for more awareness and understanding of empathy and how valuable empathy is and how it, let's say, function actually.
So the academic, philosophical understandings uh-huh. of uh-huh. it as well. Yeah. So all that. It's also, I think, because it's a large facility, it's going to get more attention.
Mm-hmm.
It can really help us raise. I used was working before out of just a home office, and you mm-hmm. work, you know, nobody pays attention. But now having this big facility, you know, a lot of people are interested and we're meeting a lot of the community leaders. And I think we can really scale, you know, with this as a step, we can really scale up a movement. You know, it's going to be a big help. Maybe we get funding, get donors who want to, you know, put money into, and also, you know, for the political polarization, you know, it's tearing the country apart. It's a lot of wasted energy. If we can help address that, if we can address the social political problems, you know, all the social ethnic issues, getting people together to talk, I think we can
to create a empathy space which is able to hold this dynamics, violence, and energy, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I have a question in mind because I'm wondering, you know, when we're talking about empathy and we have this common understanding that it's very powerful to create connection and create possibilities, even in situation where you see only one option or no option to handle that situation. It's a question to you as an expert, because my question is, when empathy is so powerful and can create so much connection, which we value and we feel and connected to each other, what do you think? Why do we behave different in the society, in the politics? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Why do we use different strategies like violence or judging or power over, something like that?
Yeah, if once you see it works so well, it's like you'd think people would just jump on it. And yeah, I kind of wonder how that same question, because when we did this empathy tent work, you know, at the political rallies, a filmmaker saw our work in Berkeley and interviewed me and then said, I'd love to have you come to Los Angeles. There's a impeach Trump rally and I want to set up the empathy tent and do some empathy circles between the political left and right there. And we went down to Los Angeles and set up the tent at the city hall, kind of on the park. And across the street was a police station with several hundred pro-Trump. And then there was an impeach Trump march, you know, past there, I don't know, many thousand marched. And then for the day, we had one person from the left and one person from the right come into the empathy tent. We did empathic, you know, circle with them. I did six pairs during the day right there out on the streets. And five of them, I think it was, ended with hugs between the participants, right?
Yeah.
And then on the other side of the street, they're like screaming and yelling at each other. And then they made the documentary. The documentary comes out. And then here's a tangible example of the difference. And I'm thinking people are going to beat a path to our door. Like, yeah, you're really doing this. This is really working.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, why aren't they? and it's like, so I have that same sort of a question is, you know, there's a skepticism. People are into the power over, you know, culture. And it's even, you know, for smoking, you know, why did people smoke when they heard that it took, it's like, you're going to die. This is going to probably kill you. It's going to, you know, for years. And it took a movement, you know, a long movement to, you know, change the dynamic. So the shift from the current reality to a new reality does seem to take time, even though it's going to save your life, you know, not to smoke, you know. So, and, you know, how do we build that movement, I think, is sort of the question. You know, what can we do? Like, I would love to get our empathy tent, you know, going and do chapter based. So we have empathy tent groups like all over the country and the world. I think we have one in Poland, you know, too. And that then we get a movement going where I would like to take the empathy tent to like this, you know, in Washington, D.C., to the Capitol Mall. And we set up the empathy tent there. And say, we're not leaving until Republicans and Democrats have empathy circles with each other. You know, we go on a hunger strike or something. So any sort of a cultural shift, you know, needs to have a movement behind it. You know, can we have, like, we can't do it here in the United States with Democrats and Republicans, but in Germany with the parliamentary system, you can have an empathy party or something, you know,
yeah.
Or, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
Actually, we can need it here as well, because we have also, for me personally, somehow threatening developments in the politics. However, when you're talking about the empathy tent here in my city where I live, we have started the citizen initiative, and we organizing listening benches in the parks and places. So we go to the benches, sitting there and offering listening. But to coming back to the question about why the people are using this power over all this, let's say this disconnecting strategies instead of the connecting strategies. When I'm listening to you, what came up in my mind was, okay, maybe it's just the reality to accept that human beings try to use easy strategies to fulfill their need, and that empathy is something you have to develop through your life, maybe, and it's not the basic setup you came up with. Even I think as a baby, you need empathy to survive because you cannot talk and you have not the power to act somehow, you know, and that this is a skill you have to develop and to practice, to cultivate it. And even if we have a different culture in our societies, with screaming and expressing anger in a destructive way, so then it makes sense to me why an empathy center came up.
it's why the culture doesn't shift, but I think that we just need that movement and people, you know, to be teaching empathy skills in the schools. If I would have learned, you know, just basic empathy, empathic listening, or an empathy circle and conflict mediation in the school, you know, early on, if the whole school was learning it, it would have spread. You know, I could have used it for my whole life, because once you sort of have it, and it's only a starting point, and you can always go deeper too. And so I think we need that, like, in terms of publicity, you know, getting the word out, you know, with that empathy tent, we probably have like 20 articles, and it was on TV and so forth. So I think we need sort of like a social activist empathy, you know, that's sort of a more assertive empathy movement, where we really take the tents out and, you know, occupy the Bundesrat, you know, in front, and it's like, we're not leaving here, and we're going on a hunger strike. And I think I think we need a new kind of an empathy that's, you know, just a confidence that mutual empathy is important, and I'm willing to listen to you first, but let's have it be mutual, and we need to have a societal change. So I think we need to build that movement, you know.
You know, actually, through this listening benches we have here in Düsseldorf, it's a state capital, you know, from North Rhine-Westphalia, Düsseldorf. So we have this state parliament here from North Rhine-Westphalia. And the politicians got aware about this listening benches initiative, or we call it listening outside, because of during COVID, we wasn't allowed to meet inside. So we started listening outside. And they got aware about this, especially because over 50% in Düsseldorf, in the city where I live, 50% of the citizen living in a single household, so there's an issue of loneliness, and this is important for the politicians, so they invited us to the parliament, into the back office, not in the parliament directly, but in the back office, to talk about and what can be done. And so next week we have a meeting there too, to talk about loneliness and how listening can contribute to bring the people together, because, you know, short story for me, I was in the German army for 12 years in military. And one insight I got is the people who fight on the battlefield don't know each other. And actually, the people who sent them to the battlefield know each other, the politicians. They talk on the table and doing negotiation. Yeah. They know each other, but they don't fight each other. So my conclusion of it is, people who don't know each other fight each other, and people who know each other don't fight each other. And I guess there, empathy is a powerful concept to bring people to get to know each other. Like you mentioned in the Gaza war now, when Palestinian Israelis would do or have to before the war or after the war, this empathy circus, I could imagine that they get to know each other, and then there's no need, reason, and also no soul where you can see violence, you know, because they know each other, and then people can tell something about the other groups. But if they know each other, the seeds of blaming cannot flourish. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. If you can just get them to talk, sit down with each other and have some practices. Yeah. That's why the empathy circle is, I think, so powerful, is it gives a basic structure of mutual listening. If you just bring the people together, they might just start yelling at each other or, you know, putting each other down, or somebody does all the talking.
Yeah.
So to have the empathy circle is a practice where you know, you have some basic, you know, rules of, you know, I don't know if you've seen our empathy circle practice, but it's like there's one person as a speaker, and then there's an active listener, and we, you know, we might have a topic, could be what are feelings of concern, worry, fear that you're dealing with, or just, you know, any topic. And the speaker speaks, and you know, a little bit for a minute or so, and the listener reflects back their understanding of what, you know, so they're empathizing with the listener. And then the speaker checks, did they understand me? If they did, you continue. If they didn't, you just say it in other words until you really feel heard and understood. And then we have time limits, so somebody can't dominate the time. So maybe 5 minutes. And then when the time is up, the listener becomes the speaker, and they select their listener. So we have small groups, you know, 4, 5, 6 people maybe. And that way everybody gets heard. And so I think it's having those, you know, I just see that from the empathy movement. I think that's like the core foundational practice. Like if you if you have the compassion movement, they always talk about meditation, right? It's like mindfulness meditation. I think the core of the empathy movement, it's relational and it's everybody being heard. So I think it's a different starting point. You know, meditation's, you know, fine for people are into it, but it's a different starting point. It's kind of like, you know, Marshall Rosenberg would say, empathy before education.
Yes. It's
empathy before everything. You know, it's like empathy is a first step. Yeah. And then you can go whichever direction you want, but you got to have that
empathy.
Foundational empathy.
So what I've heard from you is so the fun thing is that you mentioned, actually you mentioned the storytelling of the, for example, the empathy tent, the experience you have made. So the storytelling about empathy and the effect, the power of empathy is important to be spread to the people so that they get inspired and see the value of it. It's important for you, I got. And what I sense is, even you seems to me quite calm and very clear about the empathy, but what I sense is the fire in you, or the
determination, persistence,
engagement for the power of empathy. That because I guess you have, you in doing your life, you and the work you do, you have experienced the true power through, or which evolved through empathy, and that it's what you would like to, that's maybe the reason why you're talking about this has to be a movement. And also you mentioned drastic strategies to get being heard and seen by the politicians, like hunger
strike.
So it's very important.
Be timid, say, oh please, you know, can we do this? It's like we're gonna go set up and be assertive, because this is important, and it's not like I'm gonna try to dominate you. I'm just wanting to bring you into a mutual empathic dialogue, you know, and if we can get to politicians, we've done some circles with politicians. When I ran for Congress, the first thing I did is I asked the other candidates to do an empathy circle, and some of them took part, you know, and then.
This reminds me to something, a documentation I've seen from the United Kingdom Parliament. And they did coachings and sessions with the politicians in the parliament. Like, they gave them empathy, and then they asked them later what this had made to them, and also how it has changed their behavior as a politician in the parliament, and the choices they did during votes inside the parliament. Mm, you know,
Just by them doing listening to the politicians, it had an effect and impact.
Yes.
Just that somebody was listening to them.
Because they are also in their habits and behavior, you know, of behavior. Cool. So we are all, I guess we are almost 40, 45 minutes on the way. And I would like to start, I would like to wrap up. And yeah.
Okay.
So what I got from you, what's moving you and very important for you, is the power of empathy and your experience and your believing that this can change something in between the people, in the relationship between the people, also for the people themselves too, I guess. And when I'm saying this, there comes one last question to you. This question is, why is this so important for you to contribute to this creation of empathy between the people? You said in advance, you said it's about sense, meaningful, purpose. I'm wondering, why is this so important for you and the part of your life?
Yeah, I think, you know, Carl Rogers, who did a lot of the work on, you know, foundational work on empathy, Marshall Rosenberg was a student of his. And I thought there's one, he just says, being listened to feels damn good. So it feels good. It has a good feeling. So I think that's the kind of the core, is it has a good feeling to be heard, to see people hearing each other. Maybe when other people hear each other, I know I'm in an environment where I'll be heard too. There's a sense of warmth and connection, and that deeper humanity, that sense of the humanity, that common humanity that I've seen all over the world, you know, feeling in connection with that. I just like this conversation. It's really enjoyable to, you know, talk to you about, have a chance to talk about empathy and how it works, and this vision to spread it around the world. It's and seeing success, you know, is fun to see things moving, seeing the snowball kind of grows. You have doing something, you think, yes, that sense, that is a sense of satisfaction. Like when you build something, right? Yeah. You have a tangible thing you built, you renovated some of your house. You see, you put energy in, you created something, you know, beautiful. There's a real sense of satisfaction of just creating something that sort of works and, you know, you did with your hands or,
When I'm listening to you, one word comes up in me. It sounds and feels like doing something or contributing to something from love, you know?
Yeah. And we actually say that the empathy circle is microdosing love. Because every time people listen to each other in a little bit, it's a little microdose of love. So I think that is it, true. It's microdosing, and that love can grow. Yeah.
Okay, so is there something at last you would like to share with me or the listeners?
People can connect with us at theempathycenter.org, O-R-G, and, you know, they can see all the different projects we do with you. If, you know, I'd love to connect with you about your listening bench, you know, maybe we could work together on the empathy tent, because I think if we had one thing like the empathy tent all over the world, it could really, you know, have the impact of, and if you go to empathytent.com, you can see a lot of the work that we did on the empathy tent. So I'd love to collaborate with others, you know, hope you'll come to Santa Barbara, Sebastian.
Yeah, I have it in my mind, on my bucket list. I just put it on my bucket list.
Oh, good. Yeah, to come and, you know, take a workshop, hold a workshop or whatever, you know, do some strategizing on building the movement, an empathy movement, whatever. Yeah. And that's an invite to all your listeners.
Cool. So then let me say thank you very much for being here as my guest, sharing your satisfaction and about empathy, the impact and the power of empathy, and this huge, lovely topic which is moving you so deep and is purposeful for you. Thank you for sharing that with me.
Thank you for your interest and really enjoyed the connection.
This was episode 65, Seeing Each Other's Humanity, the Power of Mutual Empathy. If you like the podcast, follow and rate it and share it with your friends on social media. And if you want to be heard or give me a feedback, please write to me at podcast@empathieschenker.de. On that note, see you in 2 weeks.